where we are.
Exactly. And so we do have some gray lights. And actually, for this being year one, you're not going to see any red lights. You're going to see gray lights. Because those metrics where this was our first time capturing it, or if we couldn't capture it at all. So that's a success. We could capture everything that was on that list. But you're going to see some gray lights for those where this is our first time capturing some of those key performance indicators. And so we wanted to make sure that we were not only accurate, but fair in representing the process that we're using. So for goal one, overall green light, student success. That green light indicates the metric is on track. The majority of those indicators were also green. Happy in committee to go into detail with those. You'll see a yellow light for student engagement. This one's an interesting one because most of the questions have to do with our student voices survey. And what we'd like to have is more participation in that survey, which was one of the reasons it's yellow. But part of what we're seeing with student engagement is that we do that series with first semester students, continuing students, students that semester they're graduating, and alums. It's our graduates and alums who tout how much they benefited from the engagement, much as Tate just did just now. We're not seeing as much from our entry students. We want to shift that a little bit. So that's why the committee rated that one yellow. And then external measures. External measures, our transfer rate, our completion rate, those things that we report out to outside entities, were green lights. Maximizing academic excellence and innovation through community engagement and partnerships was yellow. Yellow, we'd like to do better. Our team really focused on pathways, a better way of looking. This one is probably pipeline. Making sure we're getting more students from not only Charlotte-Mecklenburg schools, but other homeschool populations, charter school populations in the area. Economic development, economic success, very similar. I don't want to represent this as if there were no green lights within this category, though. There were. One of those that I want to highlight is our posting intensity. So we do use Lightcast, which is labor market data from the company used to be known as MZ, and many of you may know it by that label. But what we do is we look at those careers that are the highest posting, where a bachelor's degree is not required in this area, and making sure we have the programs that match that, and how quickly we are to respond to that. And so that was a green light within this area. So it looks very cautious, but part of it is because our strategic planning committee says we should have bigger goals, and being able to pull more people in, and making sure we can get them to that next step. The external communication had to deal with some of the web metrics. This is the first time we've really looked at who's engaging with our website. How are they engaging with it? So that's why that one there is gray. But overall, it's a yellow. Advancing our organizational color, overall, is green. Dynamic people, of course that one would be green because we all are. But in looking at some of the metrics like employee retention, and the types of offerings we're giving for professional development, that's there. With the talent development, that one is great. Again, because there are some of the programs that we've been offering that have been highlighted here, like our partnership with the Center for Creative Leadership, the LEAD program that Mark and Dr. Dietemeyer made sure to highlight for all of our leaders who supervise. This is academic year 23-24 data. That was the first year we did that. And this one was one of the tipping points for why we leaned more towards green, because we have plenty of active engagement. Strategic stewardship of resources. One of the reasons we collect the data in the fall of each year is so that we can complete not only the academic year, but the fiscal year. We're in wonderful financial standing. Shout out to Jessica Boyce and her team. And so definitely that green light there is important. And then internal communications. Again, being able to look at our communicator, which is the employee newsletter, letter CPCC today, excuse me, Central Piedmont today, our student newsletter, looking at some of the engagement rates there. It's the first time we've really dug in and looked at those more intently. So that's why that one is a gray. But overall, a green. So the next time, this time next year, when I stand before you and present, I'll show you where we were with our lights this year and where we are with our lights next year so that we can look more at how the college has grown and the strategies the college has adopted to get to whatever those lights are. But this is year one. Being able to collect in the fall and report out in the spring will allow us to capture 3 years of data before we sunset this plan. This plan sunsets, it is Vision 2026, at the end of next fiscal year. So part of what we're doing now is we're making sure, first of all, that we've got our traffic light, our stop light, ready to go out to the college so that they can understand it. We've reconstituted our strategic planning committee to make sure that we do have broad-based membership. And we're actually meeting in a couple weeks to discuss strategies around each of those lights and how we properly communicate that to the college as a whole. Excuse me. What we're also going to do is talk a little bit about data collection for next fall and the report out. But what we're also doing is working on engaging with a consultant to come in and work with us on our next strategic plan. We've done the dialogues with Dr. Dietemeyer. One of the things that we've emphasized is that one of the wonderful things about strategic planning is you get to look at that long-term view. It can be frustrating because the minute you hit your stride, it's time to start planning for the next one. And that's the spot we're in now, starting to plan for the next one. And that one will be very similar to that process that we're looking at. What we've highlighted in the RFP is that we want to do a process where we get stakeholder input. So I'm going to thank you in advance because we will be reaching out to get your perspective. We'll also work with students, employees, other members of the community to make sure just as this one is responsive to our community's needs, that next one will be as well.
Thank you. That's great report.
Any other questions for Dr. Clark?
I know I asked last time how long the next plan is going to cover. Could we decide that one?
Yeah.
Maybe not. 3 years, 4 years, 5 years?
So that's a great question. It did come up as we were doing our dialogues with Dr. Detour. Look, I think right now the world is very dynamic, and I think higher ed is changing, as we've talked about for several years. I think that we hire the facilitator, the consultant for that, and we go and we have conversations and dialogues on the review, but our stakeholders, including internal and external, I think that'll come to fruition. I think the key part of that is, let's say it's a 3 year or it's a 5 year, whatever the time limit, I would say we need to make sure it's flexible and nimble enough as things change, that we have some on-ramps and off-ramps. So for instance, when we did the original plan, as Dr. Clark mentioned, great plan, we had five goals at the time, total new mission, vision, values, we reset the kind of the brand statement and we were off and running. And it was probably set to be a 5 year plan, right? And COVID hit. So one of the reasons why we did the refresh is we needed to take not only the pulse check, but everything we were doing academically was different. How we were delivering instruction, where we were going, how we were teaching, how we were using technology. And rather, we were backwards, right? And so how do you figure out to get that pulse of where people are, but also all the learnings you had by having to, I do not like the word pivot, but as you had to move towards where the new world was going, so to speak. So I think as we have our conversations and do this really stretch kind of engagement around where are we going, I think we'll be that will help inform the process. So I think no shorter than 3. I think as dynamic as the world is changing with all kinds of 5 seems really long. But there could be some variance in there, so maybe we'll split the difference and say 4. I don't know if Dr. Clark doesn't like even numbers, so I think it's a great question that we have to exercise through, and certainly when we do that process, all of you will be involved, and then I think depending upon where we see we need to go, we have to time limit that out.
Thanks.
Hopefully that's helpful. Mm-hmm. Okay. So on deck next is Dr. Bruning, and she always gets, they get great, good news starts with Lisa, and then Tracy gets to talk about strategy, and then Dr. Bruning gets to come talk about great things that we're doing in terms of how we're serving and impacting people. So we'll give it to her to talk about enrollment.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Well, it is my privilege to bring you an enrollment update this morning. As you know, we have enjoyed some consistent increases in our enrollment this year. And in the fall, we got to celebrate our largest enrollment in the history of the college. Well, I'm pleased to tell you that we are on track to do that again for the spring semester. And as of this morning, we have 30,770 students who are registered for the spring term. Our second 8-week session starts on Monday, so that's our next biggest curriculum push. So this number is changing every day as students are adding more classes. Of course, after Monday, our continuing education classes, they operate on more of a rolling basis, so we expect that this number will continue to increase before the end of the term. for a breakdown on exactly what those numbers look like. You see our curriculum numbers are almost to 21,000. We ended in the fall with just over 21,000, and that was our largest curriculum headcount in the history of the college, so we are almost there as well. If you see at the end of spring 2024 term at 30,641, we have surpassed that now, so we are at our highest spring, and we still have half a semester to go. In terms of the FTE that's being generated by that enrollment, our curriculum FTE is estimated to be up 10.6%, and since that headcount for curriculum is up 9%, we are still outpacing with FTE. That shows that students are taking more classes, which is great because they are building momentum to finish their program that much faster, get a degree, and be out in the workforce that much faster. Our continuing education estimated FTE is up 9.3% right now. Of course, that shifts as that enrollment continues to come in through the spring. I wanted to highlight our dual enrollment headcount is up 20% just in the last 2 years. That is a fast-growing population, in large part with our partnership with CMS and some of the things we're doing there. So kind of what's up next on the horizon? At the end of this month, we will open up registration as we normally do for the fall, but we will also open it up for the spring of 2026. And this is the first time in the college's history that students will be able to plan the entire year. So instead of piecemealing fall and then spring, they're going to have the opportunity to sit down with their advisor and plan out their year. So if you think about how that impacts students' lives, because they're busy just like we are, and they're trying to juggle jobs and children's schedules, and then that increasing a population of dual enrollment students who are trying to work their Central Piedmont classes into their high school schedule, this gives students so much more flexibility. We also, kind of as a precursor to this, opened our summer registration last fall, which was the earliest we'd ever opened that. And I'm pleased to tell you that as of this morning, we have 5,900 students registered for summer. And typically in the curriculum summer, we have a total of 10,000, and we don't open it up until the end of April. So we are running well ahead, and hopefully that allows us to continue to make more room for all the students who want to be here in the summer as well.
That's a good question, but does that impact, it's wonderful for the students, how does that impact from a faculty standpoint? I mean, are you having to plan differently for who's on deck teaching? That's what I don't know, that's a question for you guys.
So I think in some ways it's a benefit for our faculty because just like our students, they want to know what they're doing all year as well. And so if they have a glimpse of what they're going to be teaching in the spring as well as the fall, it allows them to kind of have the roadmap for their year as well.
Yeah, I think one of the great things about this that we've been working towards for, is that the number one thing students have told us is that it's really not transportation that's the issue. It's really financial and family commitments. Mm-hmm. So part of that is if I know how to plan really my entire academic year except summer, then I kind of can begin to plan. How many of you have a calendar and you know what your plans are and mm-hmm. you probably know what you're going to do for Thanksgiving and Christmas coming, right? But if our students don't have a plan, they don't have no idea when their classes are going to be offered. So this gives them a chance to plan the whole thing. I think our faculty and staff, or especially our faculty, will know that. On a part-time faculty member, you know, as we are continuing to grow, as we can predict, because all this we use predictive analytics that we've been using, what are the classes that our students actually need to fill their pathway to finish? And I think that's been part of our growth trajectory because we're actually offering classes that we can forecast that students actually need. So once we do that, then we can populate more classes as things begin to fill, because I would take advantage of this, right? So you're going to know your fill rate for fall, second 8 weeks, your fill rate for the spring, first 8 weeks, and beyond more quickly, so that we can then offer more sections, which means we have a better advantage to go hire the right faculty, if we need more full-time faculty or part-time faculty, and again, then they get to kind of know what their life is going to look like. So I think it's a great question, Ellie. I think it's going to be very helpful to all.
So very simple question, do you see an increase in students in specific programs, or is it spread across the board?
I would say it's fairly spread across the board. When you have industries that suddenly have lots of jobs available, you see a spike there, but as the market changes, sometimes that jumps. We do have a very large population of students who want to transfer to a senior university. That is our largest area of program. It consistently stays the largest.
So that was a great news report. Nobody asked her how that was tracking towards the big goal. I'm surprised.
So as you know, I feel like I've got an incredible team. I really say thank you to all of them for sure for all of our work. So I want to just go through a couple things that you in the president's report, based on, as we said, our goals that we've been tracking, and just kind of highlight a couple things. So as you know, Truist helped us establish an honors program. This is our second year, and I always get asked how things are going. You know, it's very most community colleges don't have an honors program. I think it's going very well. This is our second year, and so two of our students you see up here, Angelica and Tiffany, have reached some significant milestones. You know, this program is really about scholarly research and how do you think about becoming published. And in a community college, as I said, that's not typical. So they had the chance recently to go and present kind of a dissertation style research at the National Association of African American Studies and Affiliates, and did very well. And their work will go on to be published. And so they're really making a way for themselves. We also had an opportunity, I think Dr. Hill, Tiffany was in a, I'm going to talk about something in NCLEX, was in kind of a sub-student group that was telling us about their experience at the college and transferring. So I think she's had an amazing experience at Central Piedmont. So I think you should take note. You'll see these two ladies, I think, do great things in our community and beyond as time goes. So I wanted to point those two out in terms of elevating our students and their success. So on the next one around, as you heard Dr. Clark mention, around maximizing academic excellence, one of the things that you know that we do very well is transfer. So 70% of our students have the intention to come here and transfer to a four-year institution, and our largest transfer partner is, of course, the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. So we have been selected to participate in cohort 4 of this Transfer Student Success Intensive. It's really a prestigious program with the Aspen Institute. So the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, and Summer Piedmont are a part of that. And the commitment had to be that both the chancellor and the president would be on every call, and that we would be fully engaged and fully embedded in the process. And so as you can imagine, that takes a lot of time. But the good news about that is this is your strongest partnership, and we are a big pipeline to their growth strategy as well and serving more students. It really is listening and understanding what's going on. And so we've been able to solve, I think we've met 3 times, and we'll get better solutions on that immediately. So both of our provosts are there, some of our folks on their data teams are there. Dr. Parkinson with her data team represented, so it's not just about the programs or the MOUs you have, are things happening seamlessly, and where are the leaks in that pipeline? So what are the barriers that can be removed? So I think we're really excited about this. I wanted to tell you that we're part of the 4th cohort, but I might get asked how many colleges are currently participating in this cohort. So there are 10 four-year institutions, there are 13 community colleges across 10 states. And so 91 colleges since 2021 have participated, and they've currently impacted about 16,000 students. So I said, well, 16,000 students, I'm wondering how many students we have and how many we transfer. So we're really excited about that, and we'll report back on how it's going. I think we're in this cohort for a year, is that right?
It's 3 years.
3 years, okay. So we'll be able to report out a lot. Okay? Mm-hmm. All right, and so then I wanted to, and I've got some notes on this, because I want to make sure that Mike Hawley hears all about this. Mike was attending that. So let me turn to my notes. So our professor, Sarah, from Central Piedmont's English department, recently represented the college at TEDx UNC Charlotte on February 15th. It wasn't Valentine's Day, but it was close. And she delivered a compelling presentation on the practical applications of AI in education and daily life. But what's so important about this one is she was not what I would call a believer. She shared her personal journey, how she overcame initial skepticism towards AI, that she embraced it as a tool to both enhance student learning and personal productivity. In her teaching, she has integrated AI-driven assistance with the writing for her students, helping students refine their research and composition skills while also modeling ethical AI usage in the classroom and to ensure responsible and effective implementation. So I thought I wanted to also mention that this experience elevated Central Piedmont's presence in the AI conversation in our community, reinforcing the college's commitment to innovation, adaptability, and forward thinking. So I thought it was really important that, as you have asked, which very appropriately of the provost and I, repeatedly, how are we engaging and how are our faculty using it in the classroom? So the fact that she presented this and she, again, really wasn't sure, she has then embraced it, and now she has become a very, I think, vocal leader in this industry, so.
Is her TEDx talk on YouTube?
I believe it is.
We're awaiting the link, so we'll send it.
Yeah, would you send it around?
Yeah. Okay, and then not to be outdone, because Jennifer Perkins has been here with us probably, I think, 20 years. 20 years ago, Jennifer would tell you that she found her place at Central Piedmont, and she has done amazing things at the college. But one of the things she's currently doing in her role as program chair for K-12 partnerships is she has been in charge of our teacher prep and our residency program. So how many of you know what the residency program is? Dr. Hill has raised her hand. So that was unplanned. So no, we're going to remind you what it is. So Dr. Hills, please stand up. So because this is really important. So tell us a little bit about what the residency program is.
So you may have heard it referred to as lateral entry in the past. So students who have a bachelor's degree in a content area can teach, but then they need that teacher credential. So it's called a residency program where they come to Central Piedmont and take between 5 and 6 classes, and then they're able to sit for the praxis and become credentialed while they're teaching in the high schools. Mm-hmm.
So that is really important. And this was, it's been a recent kind of reimagining for the system, but currently in this program, in 2023, the teacher program has expanded to 320 students, and the residency program has grown from 4 before we did this to over 60. And so that has been an enormous growth. I would tell you that that is a lot because of Jennifer's passion. And again, been here 20 years. She's had a number of awards, faculty awards, and doing a great thing. This is the largest program throughout North Carolina, in the North Carolina Community College system. So it's not just about what you do. It's about your commitment to it. It's about the right leader, as you know. So we're really super proud of her. And so, again, as we advance our organizational culture, it really is all about your people. So any questions about any of the 3 things on the list, just as an update? All right, perfect. So I promised you several months ago when we talked about having a scope of work, do you remember that conversation? And rather than setting goals for 1 year, we were going to do it over how many?
3.
Good job, Dave. Because he's all about the time. So I'm here today to tell you a little bit about where we are in the first year. And I'm going to level set and say to you that anytime you make some change, it takes a minute. Would you agree? Mm-hmm. And part of what we needed to struggle with, which I talked to you about in a good way, with the team, was how do you think about 3 years worth of work rather than just, we need to get this done this year, these will be our goals for this year. And it really needed to have long lasting. So as we wrestled with that in a good way in the fall, then we also had to figure out how we were going to keep each other accountable, right? And so I want to tell you a little bit today where we are, how we've built that out, and then report out to you what I think we've done the first year. It's really not been a whole year yet, okay? Okay, so just as a reminder, our three areas of focus were around growth, connect, and then E3 to the P3. Now, quiz. What did the E3 stand for? Come on, Mike.
Too early.
The battleship.
Yeah.
I'll give you a hint. Quiz. Elevate was one. Go again. Exceed. Okay, and then we were using that to kind of move the needle on with people for passion.
Right.
See, that was
that part.
That's the elimination.
Yeah,
that's not fair, because Mark's taught you that.
That's right.
So you see some of the areas. So these are kind of the big areas of focus under each one, okay? And so I want to show you a little bit about where we are on the first year. So before I do that, we are using technology. There's a program called Blue. And in Loop, what we've done is inside that, under every single one of those areas of focus, there are a number of things, just like under the strategic plan, a number of things that we need to advance, right, that we're going to be focused on. And so this is just, we happen to pick on Rick, because he's so proficient at this. His looks better than anybody else's, to be honest with you.
I'm just kidding.
I have to be careful, you guys. So this is just one piece under the connect piece, okay? So inside Loop, there's a life cycle replacement initiative. And you might be like, well, that's not very strategic. Well, when technology is the backbone of every single thing and every device and who uses what, whether it's faculty, staff, or a student, and all the places and spaces that we have, it really is. So he has in here what the process will be, who owns the role, what are the goals, and then what are the principles that's going to drive that. So if you think about that, going back, so under each big kind of overarching, right, within the scope, there's a multitude of things that he's going to be working on over the course. Okay? Any questions about that? Okay. Rick, you want to add anything about yours since we pointed you out?
No, ma'am, I think covered it.
All right. So we are leveraging technology to track progress, but just because we use a technology piece, it could be on anything. Okay. And that technology,
sorry.
Yes.
What unit technology is the AI made a big change in what you plan at first, or not really? It's just one more item.
In this particular case, uh-huh. No. This is just to replace aging equipment so that the students have more processing power. But it does play in because AI is going to take more processing power to do some of those things. So indirectly, yes, but directly, no.
Directly, no. So there's another piece, which we didn't show you that example today, of where can we, so for equipment or process improvement, which I'll talk about in a minute, where can you utilize technology and then move a resource or an asset or piece of talent over here? So there's a whole component of that as well. It's very common. Okay? All right. So this is our progress tracker, okay, which you'll be able to see year over year over year. So this is really just scope of work, year one, and this is current impact. So don't think across, because we're not going to show you the tracker for 3 years, right? So this is just for the first year. So here are the things under connect, here are the things under growth, and here are the things under P3 to the P3, which I'm going to show you in just a second under every single one of them. So what we've tried to do, first of all, I want to say thank you to Catherine and her team. We kind of said, hey, this is what we're thinking, and this would be great. And so you haven't seen anything like this in your history with me. So this took a minute to create, and so I just want to say thank you to her team, because I think it has really lifted the work and helped kind of annotate it for us. And so I'm really appreciative of that. So you'll notice there's a lot of things in the green, but there's some things in that are not. So what does that really look like? So let's just focus on Connect for just a second. So from the customer service excellence, so we assign roles and due dates for project teams, goals, and the gap analysis. So everybody's accountable, right, over the course of the 3 years. Expand continuing education. So there are five programs that the provost has decided we're going to target, and she's created corresponding metrics for, right? And you can go across these. So I'm going to walk you through each one. Partnership programs. So we've collected some baseline metrics for targeted areas that we want to connect more. So especially around our small business center, especially as we think about work-based learning opportunities, how do we increase those? How do we increase our apprenticeships? How do we increase our co-ops? Whatever the case may be, you heard some of that this morning, right? That work-based learning and interaction made a big difference. And also our facility rentals. Bring people to campuses, that is a connection point that we need to continue to drive. So the cabinet, and we're very intentional, how are we keeping each other to account? So at a cabinet meeting, we had everybody from our performing arts come in. We have four big areas that we rent out. So there's 80,000 people a year crossing through here. That's not in a classroom. So when we talk about enrollment numbers, so how can we think about those partnerships in a different way? So the question was, we have 80,000 people, what's the follow-up to that? Where are the connection points? What are we doing? What could we do, right? So then we are looking at grants, public and private, which we're going to talk about in a minute because I'm sure you have some questions about that. And we documented their current and pending awards by funder. So Dr. Clark's team is tracking that. Are we on track? Are we doing what we said we were going to do? And is that a funding source that's either going to go away or that we need to think about the next grant that we want to write? Grants and funding, we don't chase dollars just to say we can get it. Because Central Piedmont, you know, both better work. They have capacity. We frame it in, where are we going strategically? How does that best fit in what we want to accomplish? And can we, just like Lisa talked about, and how can we invite you to the investment? Does that make sense? So communications and marketing initiatives is a big one. So really quick, I'll ask Dr. Bruning if she wants to talk about, we have a whole new platform for students called MyConnect. It's really a CRM. And so building that out, developing an integrated marketing and communication strategy, not only with that, I'll ask Catherine to help her on this one because it's a big one. And then reissuing or revamping our entire website because it's our biggest communication channel, right, to our. So you two want to talk a little bit about that? We'll just use an example on each one. Talk a little bit about MyConnect because I think it is an overarching one on the connection.
Sure. MyConnect is our new CRM, and we have not really had a CRM before. So all of our communication to students is sort of one-off here and there. And as we're collecting information on students, we don't have a place to put it to be strategic about the way we communicate with them, and we don't have a way to be targeted. So when we think about our enrollment pipeline, when they come and they apply and they go through all the enrollment steps to finally become registered, it was very disjointed. And we're manually helping students get through that. That CRM will help us automate. Like, you filled out your application, here's an automatic email to tell you the next step and to help nudge you through, which will hopefully make us more efficient and help us reach out to the students who truly need that personal touch and let those who want to go through quicker to do that.
Yeah. And do you just want to talk about just looking at the math of communication to be a little bit more efficient?
So one of the other things that we're doing with MyConnect, so it's a huge partnership with IT, Student Affairs, and Communications. But a key part of that is we communicate through a lot of channels in a lot of different ways, from a lot of different emails to our students. And so just like all of you, you're saturated with email, so are they, and so they're not looking at anything. And so how do we make sure that we're being really intentional in that life cycle? So we're mapping all, we're doing a huge inventory of what do we communicate to a student when they first arrive, all the way through the cycle, and then being more intentional about consolidating those messages. We think about smart brevity in any type of communication that we're sending. So how do we consolidate, get it cohesive and concise, and then get it out to them? The other piece is, most of our students, the number one way that they will open something is if it's from someone they know versus a standard email inbox, just like all of us. So we're also being really mindful of how many inboxes are we using to reach them so that it's easy for them to know, this is what I need to pick up. And then the last thing that I would mention is, you know, texting is great, and I'm sure all of you are starting to get texts from businesses that you interact with because that's now a more prominent thing. But we also use texting for our emergency notification system, so we have to be really, really mindful of how many texts we are sending. And so we're being very thoughtful about what is sent via text versus what isn't moving forward, because we want to make sure that for the emergency notification that students are looking at those and not ignoring those in particular.
All right, and then lastly, the Connect piece. We were just looking at, Lisa mentioned about our foundation funding strategy, you know, over the course of the next couple of years, because we've been out of campaign, what does that look like? I mean, what are our true goals around getting folks to invest in some of the things that we're trying to accomplish? So having her set those goals and really working those versus just facing the challenges. All right, and then on growth, just six big areas there, and I'll touch on a couple of them, and you can look at these. So the first one is around the documented specific strategies for continued enrollment and funding growth. And as you can imagine, you keep hearing about enrollment growing, but what does that enrollment look like? Where are the areas so adult learn? We know we need to work on more adults coming back. How are we looking at the strategy for not only continued enrollment? You heard the efforts that we've made about now opening registration out across the year, opening the financial aid portal for scholarships more sooner. All of that is our strategies that help with that growth. And then program expansion outlined. Dr. Hill and the team have outlined academic plans to expand our programming at all of our campuses, as you know. There's a ton of projects going on, and so how do we continue to expand those programs and bring those to our community for learning? And then on the long-range master plan, just really monitoring the funding and the construction. construction status on all the projects that are in the facilities master plan. That's a 5-year plan that's, you know, iterative every year. So we're in the midst of that, and so Jessica and our team just continuing to look at that. So there's a couple of others on here as well, but this one is pegging pretty well on the first year overall. More work to be done. And then lastly on this one, just three big areas. It's really communication, eliminating student barriers, and people, and you've heard a little bit about this, creating loop and just kind of keeping each other accountable. Eliminating student barriers, we've opened our wellness center, which was a gift through Representative Adams. So that is up and fully operational. Dr. Bruning has recently hired an executive director to be over the wellness center and all of our counseling and support services now going through there. So we need to monitor that, make sure over the next 3 years, what has that really done to help our students and our community? And then the removal of a ton of pre and co-requisites. And so I'm going to have Dr. Hill mention that, talk about that one a little bit on this one. And you might think, well, why is that one so big in terms of impact and how that shifts things? So Dr. Hill, you want to talk a little bit about this one?
Sure. So in doing a little research, we discovered that we had implemented over 700 local pre and co-requisites, which means that on courses that are offered statewide at the community college system, Central Piedmont had some barriers to students, all for good reason, trying to make sure students were prepared to enter classes, but they are barriers to students enrolling in the classes. So as the college moved to mandatory advising to really help students make sure they were on the correct pathway, that eliminated the need for some of those things that we were trying to do a different way. So there were over 700 local that we removed. We have added back, I think, 43 that we took away, and then we had the program chairs come in and justify the need for those. So some examples, in some of our machining classes where it would be dangerous if we weren't absolutely sure that students had the prerequisite courses. So those are ones we did add. Some of the co-requisites, our students don't always know if they need a science credit to transfer somewhere else, that they also need the lab. Community college classes tend to separate those where universities have those together. So reminding students that those need to go together to get the full credit hours. But we are working through that process, but it's been enlightening for our faculty to really look at what they're requiring of our students and justify, is it something that I really believe that students need, and is this the best way to get it? So we do believe that's removed some barriers for our students in registering for classes.
Can I ask a question?
Please. I was going to ask about technology as well. So given that we have such a ages, and we try to recruit more adults, do you see that you have to go do any specific differences on how you adapt different classes, or is it across the board adaptable to all those people?
So the latter, it is adaptable across the board to all students. There is no difference for pre-req, for co-req, for preparedness. But what we have noticed is that sometimes our returning students who have work experience have that experience we were trying to get to by having a prerequisite in there. Like in some of the drafting class, for example, our instructor said, well, you really need to have a math class as a co-requisite. But as we talked to the faculty, what they were seeing is that many of the students had either work experience or had a similar math experience in high school, so they were not necessarily needing those credentials. So there are exceptions always that make things different from the adult learners and the traditional, but we feel like we've sort of met in the middle across the board. Thank you.
All right, and you've heard us talk at length about the things that we're doing in this in our people. So there are a number of things that we're doing, especially our LEAD program, really making sure that how we hire our additional LEADs for safety and security and wellness. So all things are there as well. So this one pegging pretty well as our first year. Lots more yet to be done. So I'll just go back. I know we started with the end in mind. So this is kind of current impact overall for what you just saw. There are areas where I think, innovation you saw on one. The incubator of ideas, we had a funder who wanted us to think innovatively. So we had a team that worked on that. We actually went to a pitch. It went fairly well, but to be honest, that's an area where we need to still work on. What we do in higher ed is it's an area we need to work on. Okay. Any questions about the scope of work? Does this tracker help? Is this, because we want to be able to be consistent as we bring it back to you year over year.
and we'll let you study it a little bit more. But
do each, how is the weighting done to sort of get to the top? So are each of these sub-bullets the same equal weighting to there, and then each of the three weight the same, or how do you sort of get to your overall? Yes.
Let me call on the data person.
Yeah.
Dr. Clark and Catherine, I think, worked on this. So you want to talk a little bit about that?
That's a great question, and I think we'll have more of those to dig in as we look at year two compared to year one. This year, the goal was really making sure, first of all, that the work started in all of the areas. And so I think once we set that baseline where we said, okay, the work has started in all the areas, right now they are kind of equally weighted. But we'll see as we grow.
I think the one other thing that we talked about too is some of them have more bullets and initiatives under them.
Right.
So one of those may have six or seven under them versus another one may only have one or two.
Right.
So that does change over time. As we look at a three-year view, it's probably going to change it a little bit. So, but right now, I mean, I think most of them, we started work, which is why you see a lot of them in the green.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really a one-year view. And then over time, you'll start to see year two, year three, and then the full year.
And I would imagine some of the measurements are a little more subjective, and some are much more data-driven.
Yes.
And so that would probably...
Especially for year one in particular, as we establish some of those.
And all of them have a section in the planner, in the loop, excuse me, where there's a section on success points.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those are very numbers driven.
Yeah.
Some of them are prompt for narrative.
Yeah.
So you're going to get both qualitative and quantitative success points. So definitely there.
But this progress is showing the progress in 1 year. So next year, we may be back some.
That's correct.
And realize that we're further from the ultimate goal.
Yes.
And that was kind of my question. It says current impact, but this
more, where are we in the process and progress?
So remember, the setup a little bit was, so we've really never set goals across 3 years, and those might change a little bit. So this is really baseline of how we're doing in terms of getting things moving. And so I think to the questions, this is first year. So what we have to decide through conversations with all of you is, so the second year, here's first year, which we showed you, here's second year, but then when you put them together, what does that really look like overall? So that it's going to be, I think you'll have a lot more data.
Mm-hmm.
So just try and get it started.
And all of your teams participate in this?
The entire cabinet has things that are in loop.
Mm-hmm.
So while this is, you know, overarching for the president, or for, it's really, you know, I support, I'm the overarching wings, and all the work that they're doing gets lifted up. Great. So one of the things I wanted to point out, just as part of that work, we've established three process improvement teams. So I'm going to hit on these really quick. So you just kind of know that under some of that work, we're like, okay, we need to reach in and maybe do that. So we've got a group of folks at the college that's cross-collaborative, that's working on looking at data, how that all those data points really connect the dots, improving how we request data, how we use data, and how can we use that data as an institution. We've got big data sets, but so what if everybody doesn't know how to use it? So we have a team working on that. The other one is around our procurement process. It's just, you know, we have big procurement processes that are required by the state. And then, you know, it might have somebody who is using the procurement process all the time. There's a lot of rules, there's a lot of regulations. You want to make sure you run through there. But then you might have somebody who only needs to procure something once every 3 years. So how do we look at those things and try to be more efficient with it? And not only just about compliance, which we are, but just reduce some of those workflows. So we have a team that's looking at that to help us be a better organization. And then on the college and career readiness side, we have a team looking at the area where these are really students who are trying to finish an adult high school program, their GED, et cetera, maybe learn English as a second language. And it's a vast group of individuals with different needs. And so how do we make sure we are onboarding them, reaching into communities, or perhaps if they're not? What happens? Are there better ways to make sure students are making the measurements to move through that and actually finish a credential? And then how can we work on the back end of that? But a student is not just finishing a credential, a high school equivalent credential, but that they're actually matriculating and making connections to the other aspects of what we do at the institution. That's a captive audience, so to speak. And oftentimes they just feel like they just need to finish that. They're here for varying reasons. And yet we know that high school credential is really, it is not really an honorary credential.
profession, right? They need to stay for a certificate that gives them some skill. They need to stay for a diploma. They need to stay for that 2-year degree. And we need to do a better, maybe a better job connecting them on that side. So we have a whole group of wonderful folks at our institution looking at this area as well. And this rolls up to some of the work in each one of those areas that we just talked about. Okay? All right, so very quickly, just want to talk a little bit about what's happening on the legislative front. I know that we've gotten some questions about what's happening with legislation, et cetera. So I'm going to start. I'm going to call on Dr. Clark when needed and anybody else. But we'll move through this because I know we're at the 9 o'clock hour and we still have a closed session. So very quickly, just kind of three things that I tell folks all the time. Regardless of state, local, state, or national politics, it's all about watch and see, okay? Every administration, locally, statewide, or on the federal level, anytime there's a new administration, there's going to be some changes. Everybody agree with that? Mm-hmm. I'm trying not to look at you. Everybody agree with that?
That's what you have in front. Okay.
I didn't put the places on. So with that, you know, oftentimes when things begin to have movement, we get a lot of questions. So here are my three M's. Okay? Three M's are monitor what's going on, right? Stay focused on mission, and make whatever changes you have to make. Because we're going to be in compliance with the law, right? So, just very quickly, as you know, propellancy has been out there for a while. That is really the piece that we change our funding model, really more based on some workforce initiatives. That is still out there for consideration by the state legislature. I do think it continues to get a lot of discussion. It aligns some of those workforce pathways where funding would be a little bit more equitable, so to speak. But remember, we're a very large transfer institution. And so that is still out there. So more to come on that as the state legislature takes that up. There's been a lot of questions around federal funding in terms of the executive orders. Here, I'll get Dr. Clark to talk about that one in her and we're working with legal counsel on the Dear Colleague letter. You probably read about that in the news. Yes, we did receive one, but many institutions did. So I don't feel like we were special. So a couple things about the executive orders that we're monitoring, things on DEI. Those are really both statewide and on the national level. Any federal funding that might be impacted currently, we don't believe that we have any. And then, of course, things that are happening with the Department of Ed. I did read yesterday's news. We already put the slide together. Today, the slide remains the same. Doesn't impact us at this point. So, Dr. Clark, I'm going to ask you, if you will, to talk about those three, and then you and Mark, anything on the Dear Colleague letter that we might need to have.
Let me say, with the executive orders, particularly the ones that came out in January 20th and 21st, we've definitely been, well, actually, the one that came out on the 20th, we all hit the panic button. And Jessica's team and mine sat together wondering if we needed to draw down $7 million of funds before 5 o'clock that day. Fortunately, because the continued guidance continued to come out and the rescission of some of the parts of that executive order, we were able to hit a bit of the exhale button and understand that, again, just as Dr. Dietmeyer said, we've just got to monitor, make sure that we understand what exactly we need to do. Also, trying to be as proactive as possible, so our teams are meeting, we're taking advantage of webinars, paying attention to what perhaps we need to draw down. Definitely with those executive orders in terms of DEI, as well as that Dear Colleague letter focused quite a bit on race. None of our federal funds are race-based funds. It is about $7 million in funds. And so that's not something that's necessarily on the plate or the table. One of the things that we have done particularly is to reassure students that direct student aid, those Pell dollars that we talk about, have not been part of any of these conversations. And so making sure that our students understand that this is more of a business operation versus whether or not you'll be able to afford the rest of the semester has been wonderful for us to be able to go in and confidently share that with students. Definitely in making sure that we're looking at you'll see the students mentioned, job descriptions, programming, making sure that anything that we need to look at closely, we are looking at closely. And then again, just monitoring the specifics that come with the guidance. So Mark, anything you want to add there?
The only thing I would add is that we're also scrubbing our policies. We give those to our attorneys to look at as well. We anticipated some stuff to come around DEI. If you remember years ago in the we were looking at our DEI work, we knew that for it to be to have an impact and to be sustainable, we embedded the spirit of DEI work into our day-to-day processes. So for example, we have hiring committees. There's expectations around questions that you ask, expectations as far as representation on those hiring committees. So we embedded the spirit of that work into our day-to-day processes. There may be a scrub as far as language or labels based on whatever the government comes up with, but the spirit of the work that we started years ago will not change.
So one of the things that I just want to reiterate is, so again, whatever happens locally, on the state level, nationally, we're going to just continue to monitor. I think the best thing about us is that we were built with open doors. That's how community colleges were built. That's how we remain today. And so we don't, you know, we take everybody. That's why it's called open doors, open admission. You don't have to have an SAT or ACT. Have a whatever GPA, come from wherever, and as you saw this morning, make great things and transform people's lives. So again, while some things may change, the good news for us is we don't have some of those admissions things or scholarships that we might have to fill with to be in compliance. So our statement remains today. The doors remain open, and we're going to call, and we're going to continue to do great things. So, Mr. Chair, that's my report. I know we had a number of things to report on, and I know we need to go to a closed session. But I'll turn it back to you.
Thank you for your report.
I'm happy to answer any questions.
Yep. Can we ask questions?
As you know, we are required to complete many state forms, and especially state the economic interest. And in our packet and agenda today, you'll see the one for Gabe. It's for information only. I have no other comments to that unless, Gabe, you want to speak to that at all.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Now I'm going to move to go to closed session pursuant to General Statute 143.318.11A9. We will go into closed session. All visitors and guests will please leave the room at this time.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. The open public session has ended. Come up, please, outside.
It's been approved. All in favor?
Aye. Okay, it's been approved now. Thank you.
So we got to go now?
Yes. Moving to closed session. Thanks for attending. Appreciate you guys.
Good luck with that.
Stop! Cup City!